Hi, this is Spencer Keeble. I'm here with Dr. Alan Robach, who is a distinguished professor in the Department of Environmental Sciences at Rutgers University. Dr. Robach is an expert in meteorology who has studied climate change for more than 40 years. More recently, though, you've been studying stratospheric sulfur geoengineering, which you will give a talk on at RPI as part of their Engineering the Anthropocene series on Wednesday, November 13th at 12:30 p.m. in their CBIS auditorium. So, Dr. Robach, in your own words, can you explain how we can engineer our own climate?
Well, we can't. The technology doesn't exist. But people have suggested that we try to do it to try to reverse or reduce the effects of global warming. That's called geoengineering or climate engineering, and there are two ideas. One is blocking sunlight, so less sunlight gets to the ground, and we call that solar radiation management, and that's what I work on. The technique that's studied most is to create a cloud in the upper atmosphere, like volcanic eruptions do every once in a while. Big eruptions produce sulfur dioxide gas, which goes up into the stratosphere, above the layer where we live, and forms a sulfuric acid cloud, which lasts for a year or two, and that reflects sunlight and cools the Earth. And so the idea is humans might want to do that also by flying airplanes up there many times a day and spraying the gas to keep the cloud there.
Okay, so a lot of the mitigation that we talk about every day from switching to solar will address sort of the CO2 levels that we're dealing with now. But what you're talking about is actually reducing the sunlight that reaches the Earth and therefore reducing global temperatures.
Yes, well, Let's get this straight. Global warming is real. It's caused by humans, we're sure, and overall it's going to be bad. And the solution is to leave the fossil fuels in the ground, stop burning coal and oil and natural gas and using the atmosphere as a sewer for our carbon dioxide without any sewer fee. That's the problem, but it's not happening fast enough. We're still emitting lots of carbon dioxide. And the concern is that if temperatures get too warm and the impacts get too bad, that we might want to temporarily reduce the impacts while we figure out how to switch to solar and wind, produce batteries in a grid so we can use energy without polluting the atmosphere with carbon dioxide.
Okay, so it's something that will happen alongside some of the other mitigation efforts.
The people working on it don't even want to work on it. We don't want to ever do it because we know the solution is mitigation, and we know the technology exists. There's enough sun to power the planet. There's enough wind to power the planet, and we don't even have to develop new technology, maybe a little bit better grid, but we can do it right now. The problem is a political problem. It's a problem of greed by people selling fossil fuels who want to make as much money as they can before they're forced to stop. That's the problem. And so what I do is I do research on the potential benefit and risks of creating this cloud up in the atmosphere. And so we have to balance them. We have to evaluate them. So if we're ever tempted sometime in the future to do it, we want to know whether it would actually make the world worse if we did it than if we didn't do it.
Well, that's definitely important information to have. Some of these methods that you're describing are sort of, they shouldn't be our first option. What's the best way for individuals to mitigate climate change in their own way so that we don't have to use some of these more extreme methods?
I always say it's more important to change your leaders than it is to change your light bulbs. Mm-hmm. It has to be policy done by government. Individual actions like riding your bike instead of driving your car and eating less meat certainly would be a good thing to do. And if everybody did that together, then the problem would be solved. But some of those things might cost a little bit more than using cheap gasoline to cheap cars to get around. So if there were rules everybody had to follow, that would solve the problem. The problem could be solved best if there was a gradually increasing fee for using the atmosphere as a sewer. If you flush the toilet or throw something in the trash basket, you got to pay somebody to deal with that waste. But now we can put carbon dioxide in the atmosphere for free. So if there was a fee, a carbon tax or fee gradually increasing, then that would be a huge incentive to produce the technology you need to get around, like in electric cars, and also a huge incentive to not dump the CO2. And if the money that was collected was given back to all the people so that everybody got a carbon benefit every year. And then if you emitted less per year on the average than the average person, you would make money on it. And only the people that emitted a lot would pay for it. But if the fee was gradually increasing, that would then put a huge incentive. And it can't be just on local emissions. Right now, China is the biggest emitter of carbon dioxide, more than 50% of what the U.S. does. But a lot of the products that are made there are bought here and used here. So there has to be a fee attached to the original emissions of carbon dioxide that went into any product, including the manufacture of it and the transport of it to users. But we can keep track of that pretty easily if we want to.
Oh, really?
Sure. Every product is easy to calculate how much energy goes into it and whether the energy comes from burning coal or whether the energy comes from sunlight.
Hmm. That sounds like a really good idea, from the carbon tax to tracking the carbon footprint of all our products. And I really like the sewage analogy that you created between our waters and our air. It really enlightens how connected we are to our air as much as we are our water.
Yeah, if you could see the CO2, it would be different. I mean, there's other air pollution. If smoke's coming out of a smokestack, you can see that. And if you turn off the smoke, the factory, or if you filter the smoke, then the air is cleaner. And there are laws about that. The Environmental Protection Agency does that and makes our air cleaner and helps solve the acid rain problem too. Even though you couldn't see it, you could measure it. But carbon dioxide is invisible. And so when they invented cars 100 years ago, they thought they'd solved the pollution problem because there was no more horse waste to get rid of in cities. You read a Victorian novel, there's always a street sweeper in there. So problem solved, right?
So just to wrap up, how could stratospheric sulfur geoengineering affect local residents of Troy or people globally?
Well, I have a list of 27 possible risks or concerns about doing it, including ozone depletion, so there will be more ultraviolet radiation reaching the surface, drought in some places, and rapid warming if it stopped. What if you did it for a while and then you stopped? You'd get climate change at a rate much faster than we're getting now. As far as local effects, do you like blue skies? I mean, the sky will be permanently white. There'd be a cloud up there all the time. Mm. If you like to look at the Milky Way, you wouldn't be able to see it anymore. So there are certain aesthetic things which are a little hard to quantify, but those are things. It wouldn't be as hot outside, but there'd be a lot more diffuse sunlight, so you might get more sunburn. Those are things that are, again, hard to measure. If you want to solve the problem with solar energy generation, the most effective is if you focus the sunlight and heat water or some other fluid and drive a turbine, but there'd be much less direct sunlight, so it'd be less solar energy to help solve the problem. Also, how would you decide what temperature you want the planet to be? Whose hand would be on the thermostat? What if societies couldn't agree what temperature they want? What if Canada and Russia want a little bit warmer and islands in the Pacific that are drowning want a little bit cooler? Then how would you decide? There even might be some global war because of fighting about how to manage the planet. So a bunch of other things. I mean, you're producing this technology to control the only planet known to have intelligent life. But what if something goes wrong? I mean, it's not easy to think of that concept. If you're in a car today, I'm sure you had your seatbelt on. If you wear your seatbelt, that means you recognize that anything constructed by humans, anything operated by humans can fail. So God forbid you have an accident, that hopefully your seatbelt or your airbag would save you, but it wouldn't be a global planetary disaster. And it's easy to think of more complicated systems made by companies which presumably are really technologically sophisticated that fail also. Just think of the Fukushima nuclear reactor. The cost of that accident was more than all the nuclear energy ever used by the country of Japan.
Wow.
It's not hard to think of whatever system that's built being under commercial control of a company wanting to make as much money, or something just going wrong, things that we can't think about right now. So it sounds like a pretty scary prospect to me. On the other hand, if it reduced global warming and reduced air temperatures and made storms not as strong and reduced flooding and drought and reduced the sea ice melting and stopped the sea level from rising, maybe we would want to live with some of these risks for a while until we got mitigation under control. That's the question that we're trying to do research on, to see whether if sometime in the future society is tempted to do this kind of geoengineering, they'll be able to make informed decisions.
understanding some of those risks can encourage us to further pursue some of the more safe options. And
yes, that's exactly right. People are worried about doing this research because it might be a slippery slope to deployment of geoengineering. But I think, just like you said, it might go the other way. The more we learn about it, the more risky it seems, and the clearer it will be that there is no plan B, and we'll work even harder on mitigation.